information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 230 from Media Monarchy. It's September 9th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, it is the 10th anniversary of the catastrophic and catalyzing event with updates and threats. Music, memories, and a reason to believe. The 9-9 news purge with meltout, Intel ties, Gibson, Google, raids, and church jobs. Seeds, sunspots, and witch style, plus the loss of Labor Day and the end of the Postal Service. It's 9-9-2011, episode 230 from MediaMonarchy.com.
On the phone, tell them what had happened. Some kind of confusion, more like a disaster. And I wondered how you were left unaffected, but you had no knowledge. No, the chemicals covered you. And so a jury was formed as more liquor was poured. No need for conviction. They're not thirsting for justice. But I slept with the lies I keep inside my head. I found out I was guilty. I found out I was guilty. But I won't be around for the sentencing, 'cause I'm leaving. Oh, on the next airplane. And though I know that my actions are impossible to justify, they seem adequate to fill up my time. But if I could talk to myself like I was someone else, well then maybe I could take your advice. And I wouldn't act like such an asshole all the time. On the wall makes the people look small who are sitting beside it, all consumed in the drama. They must return to their lives once the hero has died. They will drive to the office, stopping somewhere for coffee. Where the folk singers, poets, and playwrights convene, dispensing their wisdom. Oh dear amateur orator, they will detail their pain in some standard refrain. They will recite their sadness like it's some kind of contest. Well, if it is, I think I am winning it, all beaming with confidence as I make my final lap. The gold medal gleams, so hang it around my neck, 'cause I am deserving it, the champion of idiots. But a kid carries his Walkman on that long bus ride to Omaha. I know a girl who cries when she practices violin, 'cause each note sounds so pure, it just cuts into her. And then the melody comes pouring out her eyes. Now to me everything else, it just sounds like a lie.
Now to me, everything else just sounds like a lie. Going for the Gold from the 2001 EP, Oh Holy Fools, that is, of course, Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes. No other song for me seemed to sort of solidify where I was 10 years ago, 2 days from now. And I could have never have guessed where I would be now and have the amazing opportunity to reach out to all you folks out there who take the time to check out this show, and I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. This is the 230th episode for Media Monarchy. It is September 9th, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And, of course, a huge thanks to the affiliates who help rebroadcast and simulcast this show. ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. We also want to thank our hosting from Radio23.org, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. And, of course, TragedyAndHope.com. For the moral support and so much more, please get into the community there. We are on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, and Tumblr, and so much more. Gmail, Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. At the top right of the homepage, you will see the donate button, as you will see it on pretty much all the other sites I've mentioned. And if you find independent, non-corporate alternative media valuable, if it enriches your life, and that's the question you should ask about every bit of art and info that you consume. I want to thank Chris in New Mexico for hitting that donate button for the first time for his generous donation to Media Monarchy. Again, your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and going and growing. Needless to say, there's so very much to go over as we're still trying to pick up the pace and get back on track after our recent hiatus and vacation. And there's no way I could have done justice to everything over the last 10 years. So there's no way I was going to put together a comprehensive 9/11, 10 years later, episode. I think there are other avenues that you can track down to get the rundown, and they'll do it better. as I guess I've been saying more and more here, I gotta be me, and I gotta do the show that I know how to do. And again, I hope that's why you're here. Nonpartisan, Big Ten, open arms, new and old listeners, a huge thanks for joining us here. Episode 230, 9-9-11, and this is MediaMonarchy.com. We always like to glance at the breaking news as we broadcast to you live just after 10 a.m. Pacific time here in the People's Republic of Oregon. Unpacking the jobs plan. Obama says the voters have a right to be angry. Jobs plan may create 1 million jobs. U.S. pursues leads on 9/11 threat. That includes police state checkpoints in the Empire State and Gotham City. U.S. terrorism threat may be linked to Al-Qaeda boss. Interpol issues top alert for arrest of Gaddafi. And other top news stories like Mel Gibson, Moneyball, and the mobile industry. The bread and circus is all around. And it's a shell game, and you can use whatever analogy or clever phrase that I admit I'm guilty of myself, dumbing things down to make it a catchy phrase. We don't want to do that. We do want to use some sugar to bring folks in. But we want to be honest, and we want to be forthright. And we want to leave the breaking news page open throughout this episode so we can keep an eye on things happening as we approach the anniversary, as we approach a full moon, as we approach so many other changes going on in outer space and inner space. As above, so below, as the saying goes. Before we get into all our news from the flagship site and from all of the other sister sites in the kingdom, let's go over some of the friends and some of the other folks in alternative media that, again, we are humbled to be associated with in any way. On the first Wednesday of every month, I make an appearance on the Bob Tuscan Show on Oracle Broadcasting. That's bobtuscan.com, oraclebroadcasting.com. Of course, this month's appearance preceding the upcoming 9/11 anniversary, and Bob Tuscan and the Intel Hub are doing, I think, an audacious, awesome bit of work. It's their 9/11 10th anniversary week special, featuring a different guest for every segment of every episode this week. Bob Tuscan's on 5 days a week on Oracle. Every segment, a different guest. Already having folks like Bob Bowman, Mike Sledge, Stephen Lindman, Jack Reed, Jack Blood, Shepard Ambellus, Dean Hartwell, Susan Lindauer, Mike Gravel, and yours truly. They have a great playlist, and I have that linked up for you where all the videos of all the guests will go up on one handy-dandy one location. And you may know I always record my own videos when we're on with Bob Tuscan once a month and put those up on YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy. And I was going to play an audio clip as part of this episode, but again, there's so many things. I just have to rely on you to subscribe to the feed, feeds.feedburner.com/MediaMonarchy, and you won't miss a thing. But we got into what my hopeful thought is coming up on the 10th anniversary, is the possibility of a Zapruder film of 9/11. That is to say, the American public wasn't shown the Zapruder film until 1975, nearly 12 years after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And that was a pivotal event that got the public to realize, hey, Oswald was probably a patsy. And even if he did do anything, he sure as hell didn't do it by himself. Thanks, Geraldo. 1975, on Geraldo's show Good Night America, Robert Groden and Dick Gregory showed the Zapruder film. They contributed to the Church Committee. They set up the Hart-Schweiker Committee. They set up the House Select Committee on Assassinations. It was a positive move. And we don't have time to get into, yes, of course, any bit of disclosure that may come from the corporate-controlled media. You have to wonder sometimes, are they doing it for a reason? And that possibility is always there. So let's just say, and let's just hope, that perhaps we haven't seen our Zapruder film of 9/11. That is to say, not necessarily a film. Whatever that key event and disclosure and spreading of the word, whatever that smoking gun is, could be very close. So check out that video, check out that appearance, and of course check out the 30 plus guests on BobTuscan.com all this week. Grabbing some of our other favorite friends, alternative media, of course, the latest episode from PeaceRevolution.org, episode 38, The High Cabal, getting into the East India Company, Thomas Malthus, Winston Churchill, Buckminster Fuller, and of course, Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, getting into his book, The Secret Team, the CIA and its allies in control of the U.S. and the world. Furthermore, interviews, Prouty.org, and of course, you should check out, I'll throw in, BlackOpRadio.com as a great resource for assassination history. Episode 38, The High Cabal, Lessons in Foreign and Domestic Policy. The latest, greatest episode from the number one educational podcast on Podomatic. That's PeaceRevolution.org from the fine folks at the TragedyAndHope.com community. Now, my man Clyde Lewis is also on 5 days a week here in Portland, KXL 101.1 FM. Like I said, it's amazing having him there. He's number one in the slot, prime time, weeknights. It'd be like having something like Red Ice Radio on your terrestrial radio station, and the average person is going to blow their minds. So we didn't go over the episodes last week. I didn't have them posted while we were on vacation. But we always post up the links to the articles and provide the links to the podcast feed. And again, if you find this media valuable, throw a few bucks their way. Death Star, Earthquake as Seen on TV, The Sounds of Armageddon, Ellen and Entry, My Dear Watson, I particularly like that one, Listening to Tunnel Vision, 9/11 Children's Hour, MK Ultra, This Is Your Brain at Wholesale, Color Me Black, Cheney, The Devil Behind the Curtain. Those were the episodes while we're gone. And then we're back, and there's even more episodes. Clyde, like so many others, doing 9/11-themed episodes all this week on his show. And again, we have all those articles posted up for you. Stand Down, Let's Roll Over and Play Dead, WTC Building 6 Case and the Puzzling Evidence, Let's Roll, The Plain Truth Gone in a Puff of Smoke and Mirrors, Oh, Thank Heaven for 9/11, Sign of a Convenient Myth, and finally, The Truth That Sets You Free Pisses You Off at First. Those are the articles, those are the episodes from GroundZeroMedia.org. Clyde does have a special event coming up this Sunday, 9/11/11, broadcast live on KXL, and an event being performed at the studios of KXL in downtown Southwest Portland, Oregon. Featuring, among other folks, Dean Haglund, who you may recall being in The X-Files, but more so being in the spinoff from The X-Files, the pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, run in April of 2001, I believe, off the top of my head. Featuring an episode concerning hijacking commercial jets using remote control to kick off a clash of civilizations. More info for you as I wrap my head around it. And again, I have to work. I've got to figure out a way to get to this event going on live. And again, if you can't be there, you can still listen on KXL.com. So that's all the latest from BobTuscan.com, PeaceRevolution.org, GroundZeroMedia.org, which brings us to my man, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Two episodes to go over, and of course, all the other amazing articles and interviews and videos coming out from the full-time, hardest-working man in alternative media. Episode 197, 9/11/11. The 10th anniversary gives an opportunity to redouble our efforts to spread awareness of 9/11 truth. Episode 197 talks to Kevin Ryan, Michelle Chosadovsky, and Brian Smythe about some of the events taking place in the run-up to the anniversary and how people can get involved. The latest videos posted along with Episode 197, NATO ransacking of Libya nearing completion, white gold, heroin, and the destabilization of Afghanistan, media manipulation of Syria, plus interviews with Ray McGovern, the aforementioned Brian Smythe and Kevin Ryan, and also Bob Chapman. And that's not all. We also have Episode 198 posted up further down the 9/11 money trail. The Securities and Exchange Commission has destroyed the insider trading investigation records. The discrepancies in the WTC Gold Vault holdings have never been addressed. The 9/11 paymaster was memory-holed as quickly as he was constructed. Episode 198 delves into some of the financial smoking guns of 9/11. Posted along with Episode 198, the latest videos, Michelle Chosadovsky on the 9/11 10th anniversary, and part of the new Global Research TV news updates that Korber Report is producing. Pentagon frets over wasted billions, yet ignores missing trillions from the Pentagon, announced September 10th, 2001 by Donald Rumsfeld. And another GRTV feature report, Syria Intervention and the Path to World War III. Now, as I speak to you, Episode 199 from Korber Report is imminent, and it will drop the day before the 10th anniversary. Lastly, the latest episode. Yes, we are back, finally. After hiatus and breaks and vacations and hiccups, NewWorldNextWeek.com. Episode 82 is up on YouTube.com/Korber Report, getting into exclusively the 10th anniversary of the catastrophic and catalyzing events of 9/11. And we'll run down the three stories, some of which we will go into in just a couple of minutes, others of which we've already referenced, like the events coming up this weekend that you may be able to get involved with. But story one, FBI and DHS warn of small plane terror threats ahead of the anniversary, and a little reminder of the 9/11/09 anniversary where the Coast Guard military drill caused an anniversary panic across the Potomac from Obama's first presidential 9/11 anniversary. Story two, first responders decry exclusion from 9/11 ceremony. Obama, Bush, Bloomberg bar 9/11 first responders from Ground Zero on the 10th anniversary. And our third story, just going over a few of what I hope are numerous and too many to mention events going on to spread awareness and to investigate 9/11. After 9/11, 10 years of war with Cynthia McKinney, Wayne Mattson, Michelle Chosadovsky in Montreal. That has already begun. WeAreChange.org's 10th anniversary at Ground Zero in New York City. TorontoHearings.org and their international hearings on the events of 9/11. And, of course, RememberBuilding7.org's 10th anniversary campaign to get commercials raising awareness not only about Building 7, but about a new independent investigation that has a great ad campaign showing all the average folks that are a part of a 9/11 truth community, pigeonholed and slandered, notwithstanding. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm an Air Force pilot. My 30 years of experience tells me the official story of 9/11 can't possibly be true. Which now brings us to the 9/9 news purge. Some kind of confusion, more like a disaster. And we take that line from our opening song that we heard from Bright Eyes, Going for the Gold, which, as I said, in thinking of what I remember listening to, that seems to be the song for whatever reason. Many of you may know I was the music director at my college radio station, and I had been and would continue to be before and after the events of 9/11. And we were playing that track because that record came out sometime earlier that year in 2001. And we're going to hear a few other songs throughout this episode, again, of songs that in my head are directly, viscerally related to that time and that feeling. And the way that that song mentions, you know, taking a ride on an airplane and some kind of confusion, more like a disaster, all those things really kind of seared for me. And of course, yes, it's done in the, what some would say, overwrought style of Conor Oberst. We'll have a few different styles of music if that's not your particular cup of tea. But as we said, it's impossible to do a kind of comprehensive 9/11 episode, so we have our 9/11 updates posted at the top of the News Purge, which will continue then to go into all our other related updates in the world of environment and geopolitics and media and murder and mayhem and police state updates and so very much more. So let's begin at the top, my friends, with 9/11 anniversary updates posted to Raw Story, but from Reuters. National Archive keeps bulk of 9/11 commission report sealed. 10 years after Al-Qaeda's attack on the United States, the vast majority of the 9/11 Commission's investigative records remain sealed at the National Archives in Washington, even though the Commission had directed the archives to make most of the material public in 2009. The archives' failure to release the material presents a hurdle for historians and others seeking to plumb one of the most dramatic events in modern American history. And as we mentioned, story one on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com episode, FBI DHS warn of small plane terror threats ahead of 9/11 anniversary. Well, authorities say there's no specific or credible terrorist threat, but that's not stopping them from stepping up security as a precaution. And we tweeted just a little bit ago at Media Monarchy with police state checkpoints in New York. Coming soon to a town near you. Meanwhile, State Department issues 9/11 anniversary travel threat and copycateffect.com. And Lauren Coleman, with the book of the same name, has a post on 9/11/11, small planes into buildings, getting into the sordid history of planes into buildings and the date clusters and the twilight language and the copycat effect. So, yes, we can't tell you why. We can only tell you to be afraid, as the anniversary security is heightened across the U.S.
It's one of America's most somber and emotionally charged anniversaries. It's also one of Al-Qaeda's coveted opportunities to attack again. Now, as we approach the 10-year anniversary of September 11th, the State Department has issued a rare worldwide travel alert, reminding Americans living and traveling abroad of Al-Qaeda's continuing threat, saying terrorist groups often plan attacks to coincide with significant dates on the calendar.
How extraordinary is it to have this worldwide travel alert?
I think it's very extraordinary. I don't know of a previous occasion where they issued an alert like that. I know a couple of years ago they issued a general alert for Europe and for Americans in Europe.
CNN contributor Tom Fuentes, a former assistant FBI director, says the new alerts from the State Department and Homeland Security are so vague they have questionable value. Both departments say there's no specific, credible threat of a terror attack on the anniversary, but security is predictably tightening. More police and security patrols, extra screening at airports. Warnings are everywhere.
So, and they're right. Terrorists do like to pick specific dates to pull psychological operations on. And just remember that our misleaders and their inbred, interconnected families and interlocking multi-generational serial killer families and organizations, they are the terrorists. They pick dates of interest to occult leanings. I know when I mentioned to someone while I was on vacation about when the Bin Laden thing came up, and I said, oh yeah, isn't it, you know, such an amazing coincidence that it's, you know, on an occult May Day, May 1st day, and it was the day that, you know, Hitler died, and Mission Accomplished, and that, really? Yes, really. Obama, Bush, Bloomberg to bar 9/11 first responders from Ground Zero on the 10th anniversary. More on that story from 9/11blogger.com, but let's get into briefly this situation that should quite rightly make your blood boil.
We talked about this before, and a lot of the responses, you got to be kidding, right? Coming up, just a couple of weeks, is the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attack. We're less than a month away now. Have you heard about this story today? New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, his office, has confirmed to CNN that the city's first responders, the firefighters, the EMTs, the other brave rescue workers, folks who risk their lives to save others, say they are not being invited to that memorial ceremony. Here's a statement we got from the mayor's spokesman. Quote, we are again focused on accommodating victims' family members, goes on, given the space constraints, we are working to find ways to recognize and honor first responders and other groups at different places and times. Well, James Ryder was one of those first responders.
Why is there two mayors going there, two governors going there, senators and congressmen? There's room for us.
I understand that you say you're findable, but have you picked up the phone or anyone from the Feel Good Foundation called up the mayor's office and said, hey, we're not okay with this, and we'd either like to be down there on 9/11 or you need to provide us an alternate location?
First responders are the first responders to war. That was a war. Soldiers are the second responders to war. Imagine a soldier calling up and saying, can I get my medal now? I don't need to make that call. They know where we are. If they want to recognize us in some way, which they should be, because there are a lot of heroes that gave their life for this city and this country and for patriotism, they should be willing to pick up the phone, not us.
I've got to tell you, I tweeted this out. It was on my Facebook page, and I've gotten a lot of, sparked a lot of discussion here, and then I want to read two notes. And just Evan Elite, actually a fellow firefighter, says, if room is an issue, that's poor planning on the city. The 10th anniversary is a huge deal. And something else, this is from Phoenix Racine. He said this, and I want you to respond to this. If there is simply no room and they can only pick a certain number to go, do they now tell the family members that they can't go, the family members of the victims, that they can't go, because first responders are going, there's no way around this without upsetting someone, was his point. Someone will be upset.
I worked in the New York City Police Department for 20 years. I know how large Ground Zero is. There is room. Room is not an issue.
Where will you be? Where will you be? If you cannot go to that memorial, James Ryder, where will you be on that Sunday morning?
I will be with my family.
James Ryder.
I will be with my family, and I will remember my friends.
And is that the most important point at all? On that day, to do that?
The most important thing is for the city to recognize and for the government to recognize that this is not a political issue. This is about patriotism. And I can tell you, as a staunch conservative that has voted since I was 18, that this is not about politics. This is about heroes.
That was 9/11 first responder James Ryder.
That audio was kind of rough, but not as rough as the subject matter. And as we said on New World Next Week, no matter what your feelings are about the war or about 9/11, it's a slap in the face when they don't take care of the kids when they come home, if they make it home from the meat grinder. Continuing our list of 9/11 anniversary updates, Ron Paul supports 9/11 families' new probe. More on that from 9/11blogger.com. The Deutsche Press Agency has an interview with the last man out of the towers. That is, of course, William Rodriguez, who I had the pleasure of meeting here in Portland a couple of years ago. The wounds are still open, he says in this interview. That doesn't get into any hard areas other than the fact that they're actually interviewing William Rodriguez in the first place, who, of course, was the keymaster. Freed tons of people, but of course when he told folks, yeah, I was in the basement and there was an explosion before the plane hit. That's when William Rodriguez was essentially memory hold. Again from 9/11 blogger, how NIST avoided a real analysis of the physical evidence of WTC steel, and speaking of, the new World Trade Center rises safely in the shadow of 9/11. Two great new videos from We Are Change, getting back to the 9/11 commissioners. First, Thomas Keene runs from questions about 9/11 in order to respect the families. Meanwhile, Lee Hamilton, the other chair, says, we do not claim in this report to have written the final truth. As we said last year, when myself and Clyde Lewis pulled off the 9/11 commission book-burning media stunt, if the commissioners themselves don't believe it, why the hell should you? an hour-long video of James Corbett interviewing Paul Craig Roberts, discussing the 10th anniversary of 9/11. A brand new article, just saw it this morning, added it as an update to this news purge from tarpley.net on the probability of large-scale false flag terror events increasing as the European banking panic looms. Late yesterday, Obama administration officials, speaking off the record, of course, told reporters that they had a credible but unconfirmed threat warning for a terror attack around the time of the 9/11 anniversary Sunday. This announcement capped a week in which numerous veterans of the original 9/11 false flag terror attack and cover-up have been prodigal with their media warnings that a repetition of the bloody tragedy of 10 years ago is simply a question of time. Figures have included folks like Giuliani and the aforementioned Keene and Hamilton. Based on the current intel constellation, a large-scale false flag terror attack over the coming weeks and months is now increasing in probability because such a terror attack, plus the wars it would unleash and the martial law which it might be used to impose in Europe and North America, would facilitate measures which the ruling class finance oligarchs of these nations judge to be essential for their short-term survival. The false flag events could be blamed on Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, the Palestinians, or a range of others, such as the lone wolf homegrown terrorist threat here in the States. Once again, the initiative may be passing into the hands of that rogue network, invisible government, secret government, parallel government, deep state, or special forces underground, which exists at the point where Wall Street and the City of London financial bosses intersect with the dominant personalities, both active duty and retired, of the Anglo-American secret intelligence establishment, referred to just a few minutes ago on episode 38 of PeaceRevolution.org, The High Cabal. EndOfTheAmericanDream.com gets into 10 years after 9/11 and asking the question, is America a better place? We shudder to even broach the answer. Pakistan government detains doctor who ran that fake vaccination program to help the U.S. track down Osama bin Laden. Wired.com and Danger Room has a hit piece on the new Rick Veitch comic book, published this week from Image Comics. It's called The Big Lie. Wired calls it Four Color Conspiracies. There's a 9/11 truther comic. And our last note, posted up on the 9/9 News Purge related to our 9/11 anniversary updates, comes 2 days ago from the New York Times. Newly published audio provides real-time view of 9/11 attacks. Now, as we tweeted this out, we put quotes around view, as I'm not sure how audio is supposed to be seen, but that notwithstanding, each anniversary comes with a trickle-out of new bits of info, generally released by the controlled corporate media that don't add anything to flesh out the story and answer any of the hundreds of unanswered and ignored questions concerning the official story. But it's just more what somebody called waving the bloody shirt. It's just more trauma. It's just more bits for you to be disgusted and somewhat titillated by. Hopefully, we are very close to our Zapruder film of 9/11, whatever form that may take. Now, that finishes up, like I said, our 9/11 updates at the very beginning of this news purge. So let's continue down as we go into all the other areas. As we said on Bob Tuscan's show just the other day, 10 years later, it can't just be about 9/11 truth. There are so many other things. And that's what 9/11 truth and my own amateur investigations and alternative history research have shown, that it goes so much deeper and it is so connected. And I have, you know, huge thanks to the folks that when I started to Google and wonder and search about 9/11 and look for the video of the plane hitting the Pentagon in 2002, when I found folks like Alex Jones and others who had already been doing great work. Now, as you should very well know, we're not into the hero worship here. We don't play the Patriot games. We don't argue about which host we like best and who's an agent and blah, 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 because all that infighting gets you nowhere. And it's the spirit inspector of COINTELPRO, even if it is an actual counterintelligence program infiltrating your group. That virus is still there. So we we're vaccinated against that. Speaking of, let's get our BioWars Enviro Health updates. Government paper shows melt out at Fukushima was predicted on day one. That's coming from ENENews.com, a fantastic source for Fukushima-related news that you aren't going to get anywhere else. Day one, of course, being 3/11, this Sunday being the 6th month anniversary of the Fukushima disaster. Meanwhile, here in the States, bulldozers begin working on a new reactor at the recently earthquake-hit Virginia nuclear plant that was built on a fault line. Any relation to those recent earthquakes in Virginia? Any relation to the space events and the planetary alignments or Comet Elenin or HARP or any of those things? Obama signs with manufacturers in blocking stricter smog standards. That's from allgov.com, as we will get to in just a few moments. Hopefully it's coming to the point where even the most brainwashed lefty is realizing they've been bamboozled. And Steven Soderbergh, the director of the new movie Contagion, notes that directing Contagion made him think about washing his hands before grabbing nuts. We've been mentioning this new movie, Contagion. We've been tweeting about it on Navigate Netflix. Yes, it's Steven Soderbergh, the director of the Ocean's 11 series and other really good movies. He has been one of my favorite filmmakers. He's getting into the predictive programming of the biological wars coming soon, whether it's something like The Stand or 28 Days Later or God knows what, Andromeda Strain may be crashing here soon. Soderbergh getting into the field of predictive programming. So it'll be interesting to see Contagion and what it may contain. A couple notes on the drug war from Cryptogon.com, sourcing back to the Columbia Broadcasting System. Multiple White House officials knew about the fast and furious gun-running scheme, funneling guns across the border with the DEA and the ATF to help fund narco-terror south of the border that will soon be eliminated to bring about a North American Union. And it ain't just happening at the border, my friends. The IntelHub.com cross-posts a story from Illinois Gun noting that gun rights activist David Kodria, reporting he's obtained documents that show the ATF and FBI allowed straw purchases of firearms in Indiana that were later traced to crimes. More on that story from Examiner.com. A few notes on geopolitics. Surprise, surprise, secret documents show Libya and the CIA had ties. YNetNews.com reporting on it as well. AllGov.com. Once Libya's dictator Gaddafi gave up attempts to develop weapons of mass destruction in 2004, the CIA, under President George W. Bush, came calling to Tripoli to enlist the Arab country's help with the extraordinary rendition of terrorism suspects. That's kidnapping and torture in euphemism speak. In exchange, the CIA turned over to Gaddafi men he considered his enemies. Documents uncovered in the abandoned office of Libya's former top spy reportedly show how close a relationship the CIA had with Libyan intel agents, including the handover of detainees to Libya where they may have been tortured during interrogations. The other Libyan note from The Independent, hundreds of missiles go missing from Libya's now abandoned arms dumps. And on around the grand chessboard, Obama's dropping Syrian sanctions, talking about regime change, all going over Congress's head. Syrian sanctions, regime change, no Congress. More on that from ActivistPost.com. Propaganda authorities take over Beijing newspapers. And the last note on geopolitics, Tony Blair is godfather to Rupert Murdoch's children. As if to hopefully illustrate to you, again, the aforementioned interconnected multi-generational serial killers. Yeah, they have smiling front men sometimes that are goofy and we can laugh at, and sometimes they get in trouble and have to quit. but they'll still make a book and they'll still go about their business because they've played their part. They've moved their piece on the grand chessboard. Middle managers fighting over boss hog territories in their subdivision sectors. But I digress. A couple of history mystery notes. Veterans lawsuit against CIA and Army drug experimentation moving closer to a trial. That's right. Veteran versus MK Ultra lawsuit could go to trial very soon. Again, from allgov.com. And the other history mystery note, on the other end of the spectrum, possible human relative 2 million years old, a snapshot of evolution in action. Is it the missing link? And we move to media and the memes from theregister.co.uk. Why modern music sounds rubbish. Getting into the loudness wars. A few years ago, Bob Dylan echoed a complaint that many of you share from time to time. Music sounds rubbish. Bob Dylan hates recording these days because the outcome is too loud and it's too bright. He said, quote, "You listen to these modern records, they're atrocious. They have sound all over them. There's no definition of nothing, no vocal, no nothing, just like static." It's called the loudness war, and there are many nice illustrations with a YouTube video that you can check out about how the audio waves are messed with to give you worse sound. On a better note, however, PJ Harvey won the 2011 Mercury Prize for her album Let England Shake. As we note, our artist, knowingly or unknowingly, are able to tap into the memes and schemes going on. Let England Shake, indeed. And the Mercury Prize is the UK's kind of version of Album of the Year, except it generally has way better artists. This story that we have linked up on PJ Harvey winning this year's award from The Guardian also gets into all the previous year winners that include folks like Radiohead and Arctic Monkeys and Franz Ferdinand and Primal Scream and Badly Drawn Boy and others. But back here in the People's Republic of Oregon, Music Fest Northwest kicked off 2 days ago, and it goes until this Sunday. It's Portland's own music festival. It's the 11th year, and there are a ton of bands playing. It's one of those where you buy a wristband, and you decide which things you want to go see because you can't see them all. They're at different clubs all over the city over the 4 or 5 days. So it's got Band of Horses, Butthole Surfers, a ton of other bands I couldn't even hope to name off the top of my head. However, I'm hoping on 9/11 in downtown Portland, Oregon, at Pioneer Courthouse Square, sometimes referred to as Portland's living room, I'd love to go hear the Texas band Explosions in the Sky. You may know them from their amazing, bombastic, beautiful instrumental music that got used in Friday Night Lights. So the idea of the 9/11 anniversary hearing beautiful, droning, instrumental space rock booming out over the city will be really fucking nice, to say the very least. On a completely different note, my friends, and yes, brace yourself, Joe Scarborough, that's right, that Joe Scarborough of The Morning Joe that he co-hosts with the daughter of Zbigniew Brzezinski, the author of The Grand Chessboard, their show on the Microsoft General Electric Network, Morning Joe, sponsored by Starbucks. Joe Scarborough releases 9/11 anti-war song, Reason to Believe.
In the flash of an hour, watching dreams fall from towers, a lie once knew came tumbling down. Now that face on a wall is a ghost in a hall of a place where he never comes round. And what would you guess about a stranger's caress that reminds me of what we used to be? At the end of the hour, when I'm drained of all power, I'll still find a reason to believe.
sit listening alone to that message on the phone. He said a prayer, then he whispered goodbye. Now our boy is a man, and I call him when I can. How I hope that he don't hear me cry. And what would you guess about a stranger's caress that reminds me of what we used to be? At the end of the hour, when I'm drained of all power, I'll still find a reason to believe. Still I cry underneath September skies. 10 years gone, but my nightmare goes on. In an endless war, tell me please how many more have to die before my sweet boy comes home. And what would you guess about a stranger's caress that reminds me of what we used to be? At the end of the hour, when I'm drained of all power, I'll still find a reason to believe. I'll still find a reason to believe.
Not bad for a former congressman who had a dead girl in his office. Joe Scarborough of Morning Joe releases his 9/11 anniversary themed anti-war song, quote unquote, Reason to Believe. Our last note on media and memes, J. Edgar to open the AFI Fest this November. That's the American Film Institute. The film stars, of course, Leonardo DiCaprio, and I was rather disappointed because when I first saw there was a movie coming out called J. Edgar, I thought it was going to be the musical that's called J. Edgar with an exclamation point that was done with Kelsey Grammer in the title role. It was explicitly about his sexual relationship with his secret lover, Clyde Tolson. This new movie, of course, is only going to hint at that, and it's more work from all our favorite mainstream media celebrities whitewashing history, throwing you crumbs, and telling you it's a meal. Now more than ever, my friends, do we need navigating Netflix.com. But let's segue into our brutal murder and mayhem updates. Gunman and three others killed in a Nevada pancake house shooting. More on that from the Deutsche Press Agency. And, of course, CopycatEffect.com getting into the IHOP shooting. Their update has five killed altogether. San Clemente High School in California was on lockdown. A Navy corpsman was sought. His writings implied there could have been explosives planted there. Russian hockey team's plane crashes into a river, 43 killed. And one New York City parade gunman is still alive, policemen say.
New information in the deadly shootout at the West Indian Day Parade in New York City. Police now say a gunman who was reportedly killed did not die. The NYPD says they simply had the wrong information. Two other people died in the incident, including an innocent bystander, 56-year-old Denise Gay. Mayor Michael Bloomberg took blame on Capitol Hill.
Another painful reminder, I think, of what happens when elected officials in Washington fail to take the problem of illegal guns seriously.
Many are calling for the West Indian Day Parade to be shut down after a history of violence. Police say four people were shot and wounded in other locations along the parade route over the course of the day.
Any violence is just inappropriate in our city, particularly at a parade when lots of people are out to enjoy themselves and express their ethnic pride.
Deadly shootings also happened during the 2003 and 2005.
And we now have a William Bennett update. Man, 19, gets maximum sentence in Northern Virginia slaying. Dateline, Leesburg, Virginia. A 19-year-old man has been sentenced to life in prison plus 40 years in an assault on a Loudoun County couple in which the husband was killed. Jamie Alea was sentenced Wednesday after pleading guilty earlier this year to second-degree murder and the fatal beating of 57-year-old William Bennett in 2009. He also pleaded guilty to aggravated malicious wounding in the attack on Cynthia Bennett. The couple was attacked in the pre-dawn hours of March 22, 2009, as they walked in their quiet Lansdowne neighborhood. Prosecutors have said the couple was targeted at random and that robbery was probably the motive. We'll provide the flashback links as we have told in some great detail the story of William Bennett, ex-CIA agent, connected to bombing the Chinese embassy in Belgrade. When I started to cover this story in 2009, the attention and the focus and the traffic to Media Monarchy from China through proxy servers reposting and copying the information was fascinating to watch. And our last note on media, or rather murder and mayhem, it's tough to tell the difference, my friends. Video game allows frustrated libs the chance to kill Tea Party opponents. Following Teamster Jimmy Hoffa's comments that liberals should take out the Tea Party, a company's created a video game centered around slaughtering establishment political figures who have aligned themselves with the hijacked Tea Party. Tea Party Zombies Must Die, created by Starving Eyes Advergaming, an advertising agency that boasts Meowmix and Pepsi as clients. The video game allows players to shoot or hack up Sarah Palin, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Newt Gingrich, Britt Hume, Michelle Bachmann, Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum, Glenn Beck, and the Koch brothers, and Barbie-like Fox News and Americans for Prosperity employees. Americans for Prosperity, front group for oil billionaire David Koch and Richard Fink. These being major players in the hijacking and co-opting of the Tea Party movement, which, as you should damn well know, was originally the Ron Paul Libertarian Campaign for Liberty movement, grew out of the 2007-2008 campaign. And there's more than enough garbage and bile for both sides of the fake left-right paradigm to throw at each other. So speaking of, let's get into our Obama-sia updates. Washington Post reporting, Obama's base grows disenchanted. But what are they going to do about it? California poll shows Obama's mounting problems. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Naturalnews.com reporting on the CIA lawyer says Obama backed and continued virtually all of the Bush-era programs, as we told you he would in 2007 and 8 when this scheme was going on. Oh, but why did they do it? And why did they continue? FireDogLake.com reporting that Obama advisors feared a coup if the administration prosecuted war crimes from the previous puppet administration. We have to move forward and look ahead as we pass off the football and the agenda moves forward. Meanwhile, our old friend Darth Cheney has emerged from the shadows, and he says that the Democrats should run Hillary Clinton in 2012. TheIntelHub.com reporting on the greatest plot against the Ron Paul camp to date. Sybelle Edmonds has been doing investigations into the infiltration, seemingly, of the Ron Paul campaign by globalist lawyer type Bruce Fein. Meanwhile, Ron Paul had the chance to attack at the Reagan Library debate. Yes, there was a GOP debate Wednesday night. And an interesting link to MSNBC, where they ask, who do you think won the Republican debate at the Reagan Library? Let's click it and look at it right now. Out of a total 212,000+ votes, 57.8% for Ron Paul, number two coming in at 14%. Bearing in mind, this is a non-scientific poll. So people put together compilation bits of the few scant moments that they actually allow Ron Paul to be on television, because ultimately it's not about him. It's about the issues that he stands for. It's about everything he stands for and talks about and has talked about calls out the two phony sides. Now, again, we're not pitching our tent quite so firmly in the Ron Paul camp, and God, I just don't even want to get into this emotional con game of an election 2012 just yet. Hopefully, we still have a little bit of time. But here is one standout bit from Ron Paul at Wednesday night's debate.
Your thoughts?
Obviously, it's a very big problem. I think we need to remove the incentive. Easy road to citizenship. Nobody has mentioned the fact that they qualify for benefits as well, you know, the welfare benefits. We shouldn't have to give it. The state of Texas shouldn't be forced to provide free health care and free education. But there is a mess down there. It's a big mess. And it's the drug war that's going on there. And our drug laws are driving this. So now we're killing thousands and thousands of people. That makes it much more complicated. But people who want big fences and guns, sure, we could secure the borders. A barbed wire fence with machine guns, that would do the trick. I don't believe that's what America is all about. I just really don't. We can enforce our law. If we had a healthy economy, this wouldn't be such a bad deal. People are worrying about jobs. But every time you think about this toughness on the border and ID cards and real IDs, think that it's a penalty against the American people, too. I think this fence business is designed and may well be used against us and keep us in economic turmoil. The people want to lead with their capital, and there's capital controls and there's people control. So every time you think of a fence keeping all those bad people out, think about those fences maybe being used against us, keeping us in.
Speaking more truth than anyone else on the stage at the moment, that is, of course, the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul, closing out our Obamasiah updates. And we just cracked into hour number two of this jam-packed episode 230 from MediaMonarchy.com. So before we continue through the 9-9 news purge and get to our police state updates, let's take another quick musical break. And yes, this was the number one record in the country 10 years ago.
Spirit.
Chop Suey from System of a Down and their album Toxicity. Yes, that was the number one record in America on 9/11. Self-righteous suicide indeed, my friends. Like I said, we're into hour number two of a jam-packed episode 230 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 9th, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, your source for alternative news, politics, and conspiracies and cover-ups. Let's continue down the 9-9 news purge. Some kind of confusion, more like a disaster, with our police state updates as the U.S. faces new threats, homegrown terror, and cyber attacks. Reports show spike in homegrown terror cases, but intel gaps remain. More on that from Faux News and the Deutsche Press Agency. Activist Post has a great piece on the new Reichland security report that sees an evolutionary shift in the terror threat. That means you are the terrorist. It's always meant that, but now its mask is dropping. New law would shift all terror suspects to the military instead of civilian authority. And we've had 35,000 convicted of terrorism since 9/11, but how many were actually terrorists? MSNBC getting into why the gun industry secretly loves Obama. Because it's the fear of losing the Second Amendment. Playing on that dialectic. Oh, Obama, I think he's a Muslim or he's a socialist. He's going to take my guns. Oh, those Tea Party people, they're all racist idiots. Both sides with enough bile to destroy each other, and that's the dialectic, and that's the stupid phony fake box that we're trying to fight against here. Those are the seeds that I try and most plant, the ones that expose the fake dichotomy. NYPD confirms CIA officer works at the department. And the Mall of America, visitors unknowingly end up in Counterterrorism Fusion Center. More on that from Michael Vail's new StratRisks.com website. IKEA used political prisoners as slave labor. More on that from The Telegraph. And our last note on police state updates, I believe, goes back to last Friday. And again, as we're trying to get back on pace and back on track and catch up with all of the news, two pieces, one from naturalnews.com, one from brasschecktv.com, as the Gibson guitar raids prove that the environmental police state wants your wood product and your guns. Government corruption and the DOJ versus Gibson guitars.
News 2 was first on the scene today after federal agents searched the Gibson guitar plant here in Music City. News 2's Todd Dunn shows us what went down.
Several hundred Gibson guitar employees got to go home early today due to an unusual circumstance, a raid by federal agents. U.S. Fish and Wildlife agents, along with Customs and Border Patrol, executed a search warrant around 9 a.m. at the Gibson manufacturing plant on Massman Drive. Nationals News 2 caught up with an employee who was inside Gibson when the raid took place. He did not want to be identified, but exclusively talked to us about what happened.
We were just in our department, and one of the supervisors just come in and said, everybody get out, and so we just shut the machines off and stuff and headed out the door.
The employees were told to wait outside for over an hour.
And then they escorted us in and get our personal items, and we all got our personal items. And after that, they pretty much told us we could go home after about an hour and 15 minutes.
Federal agents executed search warrants at multiple locations Wednesday, including here at Gibson Guitar's corporate offices and at the same time at a Gibson Guitar facility in Memphis.
The search warrants are part of an ongoing investigation of possible violations involving the use of endangered rosewood and ebony wood imported from Africa. Gibson was first raided in November 2009, at which time company officials said they were fully cooperating with the investigation. Agents left the guitar manufacturing plant Wednesday afternoon, driving a truck which they used to haul items confiscated from Gibson. Reporting in Nashville, Todd Dunn, Nashville's News 2.
Nashville's News 2 tried numerous times to reach Gibson Guitar for comment, but our calls went unanswered. No word yet on if workers will return tomorrow.
I'm going to start with a story of an attack on something so American, you can always put it in the same category as baseball and apple pie. I'm talking about rock and roll, and more specifically, one of the most well-known instruments that has helped create and keep rock and roll alive, not to mention jazz and country music as well, for decades. The Gibson Guitar. Well, apparently federal agents in this country are taking issue with the 100-year-old company. Last week, the Gibson guitar factories in Memphis and Nashville, Tennessee were raided. Some of the workers told they could face prison time. It was the second raid at the Gibson factories in as many years. This time, agents confiscated wood imported from India that was apparently in violation of Indian export law. Now, let me say that again. The U.S. government issued warrants based on its interpretation of another country's laws. Now, I should mention, there is a law in this country. It's called the Lacey Act. It requires companies to make detailed disclosures about wood imports and bars the purchase of goods exported in violation of a foreign country's laws. But is this part of a larger and dangerous trend? There is one man who says yes, radio host Alex Jones in Austin, Texas. Oh, actually, we are going to actually talk to the CEO, Henry Jeskowitz, the CEO and chairman of Gibson Guitar.
Well, what happened was, I was at home coming into work, and I got a call that federal agents had come to the office and are in my office and have sealed my office shut. They are pouring over the corporate headquarters, and they have also gone to our manufacturing plants. Checking with the manufacturing plants, the agent, over... two dozen armed federal agents went into the plants at gunpoint, removed people, shut down the manufacturing operations, and started to confiscate various kinds of wood, papers, and computer hard drives.
I know there's a lot of theories out there right now in terms of why Gibson specifically was targeted. Let me just get your theory. I know you've had about a week to digest this and kind of look into it and talk to a lot of people. What is your understanding in terms of why Gibson was targeted?
Well, it's not really, I don't know. The Justice Department is not talking to us. We haven't been charged, so they're... It's impossible for me to determine what is the motivation for singling us out, and we are being singled out. Other companies are doing exactly the same thing with no consequences. So obviously we are being singled out for some reason. No one has told us what it is, and some people said perhaps it's political motivation. Well, it may be, but I don't know.
Political in what way, Henry?
I don't know. There's some political agenda that I'm not aware of.
Pretty interesting. Talk to me about Gibson itself. I mean, we mentioned earlier this is just a long time, more than 100 years, I think, American company. Even during the recession, you guys were adding jobs, not cutting them. Talk to me a little bit about the company.
Yeah, we really hired 580 new American workers over the last 2 years. We are growing. We are successful. We are competing internationally successfully. More than 60% of our product is sold overseas, so we're a net exporter. We are philanthropic. We have a foundation, and we have been very involved in conservation and sourcing wood the right way.
Interesting. Now, so far, you already mentioned no charges have been filed. Any indication when you're going to actually hear from the Justice Department?
It is so frustrating. We have been under investigation for 2 years on another issue on wood apparently from Madagascar. 2 years, and charges still have not been filed. We filed a lawsuit to recover the goods that were seized in 2009, 2 years ago. We have incurred huge amounts of cost. We have provided to the government 80,000 documents, invoices, and so forth on our sourcing and other aspects of our business. They had completely imaged all our hard drives in the first raid. And still, here we are, all of a sudden, another raid, no notice, and we're still under investigation. This could go on for a long time.
So the 2009 raid, you said you lost a bunch of money then, and from what I understand, you've been closed since this last raid. How much money do you think you've lost this time around?
Well, all the incidents, so far add up to about $3 million, and that includes goods that about $1 million of wood that was seized. And then the rest is in legal fees and disrupted production.
Let's take this out of the Gibson store and take it to a bigger picture. What do you think it says, if everything you're telling me is true, that you have followed all the laws and yet still you're being targeted by the FBI, by federal agents. What do you think it says that this can happen in this country?
Well, I can't believe it. You know, I can't believe it can happen in this country, but it is, and it has. And I think it's wrong. I think it's unfair, and I think that we need to change the law to allow people not to suffer this kind of intimidation, you know, in the future. Not just Gibson, but any legitimate business person.
You know, there are critics who say that it's because you've given to Republican candidates, and that, you know, some of your biggest competitors give to Democrats. Do you think that argument holds any water?
You know, I mean, I've given to Republicans, but I've also contributed to Democratic campaigns. I'm not an active Republican. I just can't imagine that the amount of participation I have in politics would justify, you know, this kind of treatment. So I don't think that's what it is.
What is, and I'll just wrap it up with this question for you, what is your fear in terms of the larger implications of incidents like this?
Well, you know, my first fear is my company and my people, of course. You know, this is shutting down our business. You know, if the government maintains an extreme stance that we cannot import Indian sourced wood, that is the majority of the wood for guitars. It is going to be virtually impossible to replace that in a short amount of time. That will, in fact, be disastrous to our business. Secondly, it's the fact that this federal process doesn't allow due process. We have not had our issues heard and adjudicated by a court of any kind. We have nowhere to go to raise our hand and say, pardon me, that's wrong. I have proof. Someone needs to, you know, an independent third party needs to say, yes, you are, no, you're not. And we haven't got that ability at this point.
Well, Henry, then why don't you just move Gibson to India? You could certainly get cheaper labor. Would you consider doing that?
Well, you know, we have to stay in business. I am hopeful that our public relations campaign and talking to you and the folks out there will generate enough pressure that we can get our grievance heard and addressed in a fair manner so that we can put this to bed.
And that was Henry Juskowitz, CEO and chairman of the Gibson Guitar Corporation.
Noting he did not actually answer the question about moving to India. And that gets to the heart of what this is all about. It's about the destruction of everything we had left and everything that we thought we believed in the United States of America. Let's quickly blast through the rest of our 9-9 news purge. Some kind of confusion, more like a disaster. War horrors updates. Petraeus sworn in as the head of the CIA as drone attacks increase. More on that again from the Deutsche Press Agency. White House denies plans to reduce troops in Iraq to 3,000. Somebody floated that story and forced the current White House birdcage liner spokesman to say, no, we're not going to cut it that low. Gee, come on now. You don't actually think we're going to end any of these wars. That's just the rhetoric. That's just the advertising campaign. 5 corporate brands making a killing on the U.S. wars, including FedEx and Pepsi. More on that from Alternet. And finally, on the War Horse note, because it knows no sides, Xbox 360's new Blackwater game for Kinect to be aimed at teens. And that's a nice, appropriate use of language, aiming it at the teens. So whether you're aiming your Tea Party zombie game at frustrated libs or aiming your mercenary game at poor kids who have a blown-out neighborhood with parents that broke up because it's all being destroyed on purpose, and the school and the work and the family and all of those things, sit at home, play video games, and kill stuff, you'll be ready for your job in the Empire Machine. If there's any gas to continue to run it. Lastly, West Virginia worry. Poll claims Manchin unbeatable. Senator remains popular in West Virginia. More on that from rollcall.com and News Register. Meanwhile, spree shooter Shane Riggleman kills 5, then self. More on that from CBS. Patton City, West Virginia police chief arrested for domestic battery. More on that from WTRF.com. And our final note from WVRecord.com, Bridge Day panel sues over domain name. Bridge Day being the third Saturday in October every year when there's a big party on the New River Gorge Bridge in my hometown of Fayetteville, West Virginia. If you look at the West Virginia quarter, you know all the state quarters, the New River Gorge Bridge is on the back of that, and that is my hometown. You can fit a Statue of Liberty underneath it, and one day a year they let people base jump and parachute off the bridge. So, of course, people are going to fight over the name. That's the end of our news purge as we now move to our other sites in the kingdom. First, quickly, foodworldorder.com. Hashtag Save Landreth. Help America's oldest heirloom non-GMO seed house from treehugger.com with links to Food Freedom. Getting into D. Landreth, that's L-A-N-D-R-E-T-H, Seeds, America's oldest seed company. Basically, they, like so many of our other famed and fabled and needed outlets, and isn't it a coincidence they're always usually family-owned and aren't connected to the machine? The Landreth Seed Company may go down after being founded in 1784 in Pennsylvania and carrying over 900 heirloom and non-GMO seed varieties. Something very easy you can do, and I did it, and I was able to do it thanks to your donations to Media Monarchy. Order a catalog for $5. It was easy. Done. On its way. If it helped, thank God. If not, hopefully we're still planting seeds, literally and figuratively. Two bits on everyone's favorite Monsanto. First, from Forbes, their pesticide problems and their corporate environmental responsibility. The world's largest agricultural seed producer under fire after scientists in the U.S. recently discovered what they believe to be a case of crop-eating bugs developing a resistance to the company's genetically modified corn plants. Some researchers believe that the discovery validates concerns that biotech crops could spawn new species of pesticide-resistant superbugs. And the other story fleshes this out more from TriplePundit.com. Is Monsanto's BT corn losing its pop? And that's a funny way to say yes. The Western corn rootworm is growing resistant to the CRY3BB1 toxin that the plant was engineered to produce, and then merrily going about its business of destroying the rest of the plants. Contagion indeed. Our own Portland Tribune asking the question, why are Oregon's children so hungry? A new national report shows just how much Oregonians have suffered in the depths of the national recession. The report by Chicago's nonprofit Feeding America reveals that in 2009, Oregon had the highest rate of childhood hunger among the 50 states. Only the District of Criminals had a higher rate. The report says that 29% of Oregon and Multnomah County, which I am soaking in, 29% of Oregon children faced food insecurity in 2009 compared to the national average of 23%. And you can get more on that from feedingamerica.org and our own flashback post on foodworldorder.com in November of 2009 on food insecurity. Our last note on Food World Order, 20 unusual uses for honey you never thought of, from moisturizer to apocalypse prepper. All of those things and more from ecosalon.com. And there you have foodworldorder.com. And again, my friends, if you want to get involved, if you want to help out, send me an email, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, and you can help us post and tweet and spread news. And we do have folks on deck ready to get into it, and they will be helping on the sister sites in the kingdom. Like this one, holyhexes.com, the newest site in the kingdom getting into the occult and religion in society. We'll begin with our 9-9 pop culture news purge, 9-11 sermons, and the jobless. With the anniversary on a Sunday, pastors prepare their 9-11 sermons. More on that from CNN. Progressive Christians join controversy over excluding clergy at the 9-11 event. That's right, not only first responders can't go, but clergy can't either. Criticizing Bloomberg and prominent conservatives. The Orange Order Lodge website blocked from Ireland schools. This story from the BBC notes that the site has been called non-traditional religious and occult and folklore. Phoenix Goddess Temple in Arizona linked to prostitution. That's from MercuryNews.com. Aspiring evangelist charged in vandalism of church statues in Philadelphia. And that is from Philly.com. And the final note on this 9-9 pop culture news purge, 9-11 sermons and the jobless. Why don't you ask Jesus for a job?
People are, they're in need. It's desperate times.
And in these desperate times, folks lined up outside the Statler Towers a half hour before this job fair even started. Once the doors opened, a steady stream of Western New Yorkers filled the lobby to fill out applications.
We need people that have a good work ethic, a good attitude, and want to go to work.
Many want to go to work, and Statler City LLC President Mark Croce is looking for all types of workers.
We're opening a banquet facility. We're opening a nightclub. We're opening a number of restaurant outlets. I mean, you think about the number of different positions that are available for management, to servers, to bartenders, barbacks, I mean, across the board.
Croce says he barely advertised this job fair, yet so many people showed up, there weren't even enough chairs for all the folks applying for these 200 jobs. How hard is it nowadays to find a job like this?
Oh, man, it's hard.
It's definitely hard to find, especially in the restaurant business.
On the eve of the president's address on jobs, Croce is encouraged by one of the proposals. In addition to infrastructure spending and aid to state and local governments, it's reported the president will include tax breaks to businesses that hire new workers.
Is that an incentive to hire people?
Absolutely, because there's a lot of great people out there that happen to be the victim of circumstance right now that may be unemployed or underemployed. And so by giving us a tax incentive, it really motivates us to really, you know, ramp up our plans even quicker.
Some of the unemployed who are losing faith in government are finding it elsewhere.
We'll be praying for those who are unemployed.
Father Bill Quinlivan at Blessed Sacrament Parish changed up his monthly healing service to specifically pray for those looking for work.
It's always good to turn people back to their faith in everything that they're doing. Say, don't forget to include God in it.
The church collected resumes and placed them before a higher power.
We encourage people to keep looking, keep asking God to help them. So that's what we're going to do here at Blessed Sacrament.
Our last two bits on holyhexes.com. Which style hits diesel clothing? Thanks to technocult.net. Multifunctional clothes for modern mystics, or devil worship is the new black. Getting into fashion and occult culture. The last piece on holyhexes.com. Beltane sacrifice. May 1st report of bin Laden death. And this is what we were referring to earlier. Millions of viewers were unwitting participants in the ancient occult holiday known as Beltane, with the May Day, May 1st, report on the death of Osama bin Laden. The report served as the festival's symbolic sacrifice. This article fleshes out work from the fantastic VigilantCitizen.com, and a huge thanks to my man Alan in Omaha for all his hard work on HolyHexes.com and cyberspacewar.com, which is where we're going to move now for all the updates on inner space and outer space. And we begin with the 9-9 DEFCON news purge, I-9-11 sources and SAT crash, as cyber crooks aiming to cash in on 9-11 anniversary. That's from the Register. And again, just think of the language. Our misleaders are the terrorists. And those cyber crooks, which had software running on computers with intelligence-connected organizations that had been branded international terrorist groups, like PTEC, they're going to cash in, financially or perhaps psychically. Mars rovers carry 9/11 tributes, that's from Red Orbit. CIA Mossad targeted in massive DigiNotar certificate breach, more on that from Threat Level. Scientist Stuart Nozette pleads guilty to attempted espionage because he thought he was talking to an Israeli agent. The spy who tweeted me, the intelligence community wants to monitor social media. That's from Danger Room. They should tell Danger Room they've been doing it for quite some time now. And another raid from Gibson now to Google, raided by South Korean antitrust officials.
Antitrust officials in South Korea raided local offices of internet giant Google on Tuesday, a source familiar with the matter said. This expands worldwide regulatory pressure on the world's number one search engine. Google has been under investigation by antitrust authorities in the United States and in Europe. The source, who asked not to be identified, said officials from the Korean Fair Trade Commission went into Google's offices in Seoul on Tuesday morning. Back in May, cameras and journalists were allowed in Google's office in Seoul after South Korea's top internet portals filed a complaint with antitrust regulators. They alleged Google was unfairly stifling competition in the mobile search market. On Tuesday, Google issued a statement saying the company does not require manufacturers of mobile phones that use its Android software to include Google applications on the devices. Google also said it would work with the Korean Fair Trade Commission to address any questions it may have about the company's business. Toshi Maeda, Reuters.
U.S. sources exposed as unredacted State Department cables are unleashed online, again from threat level. But from BeatWeek.com, disturbing iPhone 5 incident has Apple acting as secret police yet again. They can't seem to hold on to their iPhone prototypes. Skype is Microsoft's $8.5 billion identity tool. That's from The Register. And connected to that, Yahoo pondering sale. What might Microsoft make of this mess? More on that from Ars Technica. And the last two notes on this DEF CON news purge on cyberspacewar.com. Blast us to outer space. First from space.com, huge defunct satellite to plunge to Earth soon, NASA says. And lunar orbiter finds footprints on the moon.
My name is Noah Petro. I'm a research scientist here at the Goddard Space Flight Center. And I'm also on the LRO project science team. We have some of the most stunning images of the lunar surface that I've ever seen. These are pictures of the Apollo 17, Apollo 14, and Apollo 12 landing sites, giving us the clearest view of where the astronauts went, where they sampled, where they conducted scientific experiments on the lunar surface. So these are images that were taken by an instrument called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter Camera. It's an instrument on the LRO mission. And when I first took a look at these images, you know, my jaw dropped to the ground. When you see something that you've never seen before and in a quality that you've never seen before, it really just made me speechless. For example, at the Apollo 17 landing site, we can see where the lunar rover is parked on the surface. We can see where it drove around the lunar module. We can see the areas where the astronauts kicked up the dust when they walked around. You can see some of the experiments that were left behind sitting on the surface 40 years ago. And you can see where they are, still sitting there on the lunar surface. These are some of the most amazing images of the moon that I've ever seen, because they really put into sort of a really cool context what was done back during Apollo.
Amazon CEO Bezos' rocket fails during test. Space tourism was dealt a setback this week after a spacecraft funded by Amazon chief Jeff Bezos, that's B-E-Z-O-S, you may know him from appearing on The Simpsons, was lost during a recent test. Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com, sunspot 12833, solar flares earthbound. Solar flare alert issued by spaceweather.com. Coronal mass ejections in the general direction of Earth commencing sometime on today, September 9th, and continuing through 9/11, bringing auroras at least. Eyes on the Solar System, free astronomy software giving you 3D visualization. More links to, of course, JPL, Jack Parsons Laboratory, and UniverseToday.com. The moon has two faces, Nature.com, noting early Earth may have had two moons. Sun's Great Conveyor Belt, with links to DailyGalaxy.com as we blast all around the solar system and my head spins. Is Iapetus an artificial moon? Speaking of moons and second moons. Richard C. Hoagland getting into Saturn and the Titans of Greek mythology and asking the question, is Iapetus Saturn's artificial moon? The Real Cowboys and Aliens, UFO Encounters of the Old West. New Mexico historian John LeMay and Texas UFO researcher Noe Torres, the authors of the new book, The Real Cowboys and Aliens, UFO Encounters of the Old West, explores 14 bizarre incidents, including the reported recovery in 1897 of a spaceship and its alien pilot in the Texas frontier town of Aurora. Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org interviewed the authors on Ground Zero Live and wrote an accompanying article on Aurora. With links for you, of course. And we have another posting on that Aurora, Texas crash of 1879, fleshing out this story as reported originally by S.E. Hayden from UFOCasebook.com, which brings us to our final post on CyberspaceWar.com. It's a Japan disaster radiation update as an inspector unit records 178 times background radiation just a few weeks ago on August 20th in St. Louis, Missouri. Recent article by P.F. Lewis, nuclear expert says Fukushima radiation coming to USA, massive cover-up already underway, and that story is on Natural News. Unfortunately, not doing all those amazing stories on cyberspacewar.com justice, but as the sites start to bust out with more content on more levels and from all our different categories in food and space and church, the mentions of them on the show will probably have to get briefer, just out of necessity. So for our remaining time on this jam-packed episode 230 of MediaMonarchy.com, it's 9-9-11, and my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. We return to the flagship site and ask the question of this past Monday, Labor Day 2011, what are we celebrating? The lack of jobs in America? If you still have a good job, you certainly have something to celebrate about Labor Day. You've so far survived the decline of the U.S. economy, but yours and our and all of our days may very well be coming soon. No jobs created in August.
The U.S. economy added a net zero, zilch, nada, no jobs in August. That's the net of the Bureau of Labor Statistics report for the month. It's the first time there's been no measurable growth in almost a year. HLN breaks down the numbers.
We've got 14 million Americans out of work officially. We know that number is a lot higher. People aren't getting counted.
CNN says the report, however, is a little bit skewed. 45,000 Verizon jobs and many Minnesota workers played a big part in this report.
Now, there are a couple things that we should point out. The report was distorted because it counted thousands of Verizon workers who went on strike, but they were now back on the job. The numbers also included Minnesota employees who are temporarily out of work because of a government shutdown.
And along with August's report comes bad news from earlier this summer. Employers added 58,000 fewer jobs in June and July than what was first reported. Fox News believes the big decline is starting to affect Wall Street.
We take a look at the Dow. The Dow has been trending lower for most of the morning. You can see down more than 200 points right now. Normally a light trading day, by the way, heading into a Labor Day holiday, but this tells us one part of the story.
And all eyes are now on President Obama and, of course, his job speech. The Obama administration concedes that the jobless rate is, quote, unacceptably high, but still, MSNBC is skeptical.
Just wait till next Thursday when the president puts out a bipartisan plan, and they emphasize the bipartisan nature of that time and time again, talking about how Republicans have voted for some of the things that the president plans to put forward, even though they haven't really laid out a lot of details.
And Republican presidential candidates wasted no time in criticizing the president. All of this is in advance of the election season that's heating up. I'm Jonathan Katz for Newsy. Multiple sources, the real story.
And yes, last night we had the vaunted speech from teleprompter-in-chief, Obama stumps for jobs plan, calling for action now. So says the New York Times 40 minutes ago, Dateline Richmond, as the limelight-loving Obamasiah goes on tour after his latest primetime speech. Our related EconoCrash updates posted below this Labor Day 2011 story, further fleshing out our first month without job growth since the month after World War II ended. Illegal workers received $4 billion in refundable tax credits last year. Both those stories from allgov.com. The Economic Collapse blog asking if the end of the euro is in sight, which would relate to our article earlier in the show on tarpley.net. about the 9/11 anniversary, the threataganda of attacks, and the economic situation. Obama to inject $300 billion in a bid to create jobs. That was a few days ago from blacklistednews.com. Obama jobs plan seeks payroll tax cut, but we know that now The updates are there. The story has happened. You can go to Google News right now and see about our latest amazing bipartisan jobs plan. Work for the state. Be a snitch. Join the Stasi. Rat on your neighbor. Go through their recycling. Those are your jobs. Our final story on this episode 230 directly relates to the econo crash, the controlled demolition of the economy that has really been the second part of the post 9/11 scheme. The first was to build up the international police state all around the world, and they've done it quite successfully. In order to have the enforcement arms in place when they start to yank out the copper wiring. And average people are going to get pissed, but they'll be branded homegrown terrorists. Bearing in mind, of course, as we were talking about Al-Qaeda and Petraeus and the threatiganda of an attack, planes into buildings. Panetta, the guy who was the head of the CIA, who's now the head of the military, has been saying for many, many months these last 2 years, oh, Al-Qaeda's done. Oh, we got them on the ropes. Oh, their ability has been destroyed. But nobody remembers that when it comes time to anniversary bloody shirt waving and they want to ratchet up the fear and they use the threats, they use the credible evidence to ratchet up the controls that then never go away. But we were trying to say that our final post is directly related to the econo crash, and it's been something, for whatever reason, has become a continued story on Media Monarchy. It's been something I've discussed here and there. Postal service on the verge of financial collapse, Saturday delivery doomed. The dire warnings about the financial state of the U.S. Postal Service may soon become dire reality unless Congress can agree to new financing for the cash-strapped agency. In what has become an annual refrain, Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe on Tuesday told the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs that the USPS situation is extremely serious and warned that the agency will default if lawmakers don't act by the end of the fiscal year on September 30th. The most pressing worry is that the Postal Service lacks sufficient funds to make a $5.5 billion payment due this month to finance the future health care of retired postal workers. Unlike other government entities, the Postal Service is required to make health care payments in advance. By early 2012, however, the USPS could find itself so short on funding that it might have to shut down entirely unless Congress takes emergency action to stabilize its finances. Donahoe already has called for a series of cost-cutting measures to shrink the agency's deficit, which will reach $9.2 billion this fiscal year. These include eliminating Saturday mail delivery, shuttering as many as 3,700 postal offices, and laying off 120,000 workers, one-fifth of the workforce. He also asked to pull the USPS out of the federal employee health care plan and allow it to create its own. In addition, he requested the return of $6.9 billion in overpayments to the federal employee retirement system. The Obama administration has asked Congress to grant a 90-day extension for the retiree health care payment. The Postal Service has been hemorrhaging money in recent years, in large part because more Americans are now using the Internet, electronic bill paying, and email instead of relying on traditional mail service. This year, the USPS will handle about 167 billion pieces of mail, which would represent a decrease of 22% from 5 years ago. The Postal Service is on the verge of financial collapse.
The Postal Service is on its last financial leg, apparently. The agency very low on cash, and it's now facing default. Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe says the service is facing serious cost-cutting measures, including eliminating Saturday service and delivery, closing up to 3,700 postal locations, laying off about 120,000 workers. That's nearly one-fifth of the workforce. Steve Sintani's in Washington. And Steve, how soon might we see some major changes in postal operations?
Well, Greg, the post office wants action right away, but that's up to Congress. Now, on the U.S. Postal Service website, a so-called white paper outlining proposed congressional action says, today, despite unprecedented cost and staffing reductions over the past decade, Postal Service is facing the equivalent of Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and they need to reorganize. While our business remains vital to the U.S. economy, they say we will be insolvent next month. Post Office will default on a $5.5 billion payment later this month if it doesn't get congressional help. The big problem, of course, is increasing costs, mostly labor costs, in the face of declining mail volume. Most people using the Internet now for mail. Will the Post Office be able to survive? Well, here's the Postmaster General from earlier this summer.
We do feel that we are still very relevant to the American public and the American economy, but we also have to make some pretty tough choices as we work through some of the financial issues that we face.
On the table are some major changes, including legislation that would allow the Postal Service to adjust the size of its workforce, which could mean laying off up to 120,000 workers, and adjusting the frequency of delivery, which could mean an end to Saturday delivery. That's been on the table for some time. Laying off workers is a new proposal.
Well, as Americans continue searching for a job, the U.S. Postal Service could be the next government bailout. The 235-year-old institution is so deep in debt, there's talk it could shut down this winter. But if so many people don't use it, will they miss it?
Yeah, it's the holiday, but before too long, post offices around the country could look like ghost towns.
Yeah, I think people don't go to the post office as kids. You know, you can buy stamps online, send emails. People just aren't sending letters these days, so maybe that's part of the problem.
Here's the problem. The Postal Service needs $5.5 billion to fund future retirees' health benefits, and they may not have money to pay their 170,000 employees.
The Internet's taken over, so email is pervasive, so all my relatives, everything is email. You know, the only thing I see really for mail is packages, and generally I use FedEx, UPS, and all those other services.
A USPS spokesman said by September 30th, which is the end of the fiscal year, the agency will reach its borrowing limit of $15 billion. Representative Darrell Issa with the House Oversight Committee, which oversees the USPS, says he's willing to start legislation to find an oversight committee who's willing to look into the financial woes.
Another bailout, I don't think that's really what's going to take to get the post office running. I think better management and better facilities and better services that people can afford.
We'll see what happens. The Postal Service is projected to lose around $9 billion this year, and that could primarily be due to workers' costs. Labor represents 80% of the agency's expenses. A hearing on the matter is scheduled for tomorrow.
The Postal Service prides itself that neither rain nor sleet nor snow will deter it from its rounds of delivering the mail. But what about insolvency? National correspondent Steve Santani reports that is what the Postal Service now faces.
The post office has decided to default on a $5.5 billion payment due September 30th, hoping to avoid an eventual shutdown and pay $9 billion in debts. All this the result of rising costs and declining volume as the Internet replaces old-fashioned snail mail. A post office spokesman tells Fox News in order to return to profitability, the Postal Service needs to reduce its carrier workforce by approximately 220,000 by 2015, but cannot do so under the terms of existing collective bargaining agreements. The Postal Service wants the okay from Congress to renegotiate those agreements. But Delaware Senator Tom Carper says there's a better way.
Rather than just lay them off or throw them under the bus, what I would suggest is we incentivize them to go ahead and take retirements.
Finding a way to cut its workforce is not all the Post Office wants from Congress. It also wants to stop paying that $5.5 billion in advance payments each year for retirement health benefits, to get back $6.9 billion in retirement overpayments, and to begin five-day mail delivery. The postal unions are worried about all this, and one is going after Republican Congressman Darrell Issa of California, House Oversight Committee Chairman. A website explains Issa's proposal to create a postal oversight board with power to cut costs and renegotiate contracts. A union statement says, quote, Representative Darrell Issa, who likes to portray himself as a fierce opponent of wasting taxpayers' money, has created a slick, high-tech website that bashes the Postal Service using, you guessed it, taxpayers' money.
It's a Senate committee that will hear all these issues tomorrow, searching for ways to keep the new Internet nation from devouring an institution as old as America itself. In Washington, Steve Santani, Fox News.
Beechwood Sparks with Germination and Confusion Is Nothing New from their 2001 album Once We Were Trees. Another bit of music that's seared into my head and related to 9/11/01 back east at WSHC in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And of course, that came right out of our piece on the financial collapse of the Postal Service. We'll have to talk to our insider to maybe get more information. And we have been following this story for a couple of years. Our flashback to June of 2009 asked the question, could your post office be closing? That is essentially everything we have for you on this 230th episode of Media Monarchy. It's September 9th, 2011. And I hope I did some kind of justice to all that's going on. But hopefully the idea is to, as we've said many, many times, literally and figuratively, planting seeds. I want to take a moment to remind you yet again that perhaps twitter.com/Media Monarchy is one of our most active sources. That's where tweets from Cyberspace War, Food World Order, New World Next Week, Holy Hexes, Navigate Netflix, all that and so much more, all on a single feed. And some of the things that are over there don't make it to the show or don't make it to the main site. So if you scroll through the last week, you'll see things about Sony hiring Department of Homeland Security workers and having a chat with the guys in Surfer Blood, who I got the chance to see again this last Saturday here in Portland. And hopefully, we're going to try and weasel our way into the upcoming Thievery Corporation show here on the 14th. And I mentioned, of course, being excited about hearing Explosions in the Sky play on 9/11 evening in downtown Portland. of course, where also Clyde Lewis will be holding his anniversary event from the Bing Lounge below the KXL studios in downtown Southwest Portland, Oregon. If you can't be there, it'll be broadcast live on KXL.com. And you can get more information from groundzeromedia.org. The Love Police from PDX will also be at Pioneer Square at 11 o'clock a.m. this coming Sunday. So any of those events, anything that you can spread the word about or hopefully get involved with in some way, shape, or form, spreading the word or actually joining it, anything you can do is, of course, it's important. And that's why I do what I do. We've been talking over Sigur Rós from their 2001 album, playing music throughout this episode that, in my mind, is inextricably linked to 9/11. Not necessarily 9/11 truth songs or rapping about Inside Job, but the melancholy art and music that will never leave me. I don't know if I've ever told the story. First concert I saw after 9/11 was just 2 weeks to the day in Washington, D.C. at the 9:30 Club, where I saw Sigur Rós, who we're listening to. It was like church. It was one of the most amazing, reverent, quiet shows I've ever seen in my life. People passed out. And it was maybe the first time I felt a little better after the intentional psychological operation and trauma of the events of 9/11. As we've said time and time again, that's what got us here. I did college radio, I did music, I did sound design, but quietly I started to research the events of 9/11, and that's brought me 10 years later here, hopefully using the knob, know-how, and the media skills to produce a compelling show that isn't like any of the other alternative media shows out there. Again, my friends, if you find the show valuable, please donate, please hit the button, please support our work, and that's what will help us do it. So as this jam-packed episode 230 draws to a close for the 10th anniversary, it's September 9th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com. Reminding you, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care, my friends.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news clips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The Thought Police would get him just the same.